shine more. That's all we want, so.
Yeah, so long, they enjoy it anyway.
No, we always do, never be in our same room.
On your day, you would be.
Ruby Carmen?
Yeah.
Hello, Rita.
Okay.
We started.
Daisy, there's Daisy. Okay, let's start. Week three of a series. I know we have a few apologies today, so but the show goes on. So just to review a little bit what we've done the last few weeks. Last week we've explained the two primary powers of emotion: the chesed on the right, the gevura on the left. We talked about chesed being compared to water, which has like an automatic flow. And it's so automatic that it's not even fiery. That's what we gave the idea of why it's cold, right? So all forms of revelation, giving, connection, making room for others, all that stuff is all sort of under the rubric of chesed, which can also be bad. We can connect to the wrong things and so on. But we just say that chesed is the first one of these six or seven because the world is based on chesed, and everything we do has to have the foundation of chesed, right? And then we explained that it's got to come together with gevura. For chesed to work, it actually needs to come with gevura. We need to hold back. We need to create boundaries. Gevura sometimes gets a bad rap because it's associated with anger, with aggression, with rejection, and so on. But if the foundation is chesed, if the foundation is connection, then gevura becomes a good thing. And in fact, as we explained last week, and we gave numerous examples, that sometimes gevura has to come first. The goal is always chesed, but the gevura has to come first. Like in education, when the left, the left is first and then the right, even though the right is stronger. When we teaching, sometimes you have to hold back information before you can give what's appropriate and so on. So the summary of all that is that the foundation of everything is chesed, the giving, but the we need gevura to make chesed work. We also talked about gevura meaning the idea of strength. Sometimes when we channel the chesed correctly, it brings even stronger blessing. Like rain, for example, is called gevura. Also, we talked about gevura in relationships being the work that's done to be loyal, to be trusting, to be, you know, that's sort of the strength. So the strength of a relationship actually doesn't come from chesed necessarily, but actually could come from gevura. Okay. So that's what we talked about last week. So let's start the discussion today. Before I do that, I just wanted to mention, as we do every year, some of you I know have already participated, but we're doing our annual raffle, which is an important fundraiser. So if you can, please buy one or as many tickets as you can. You can talk in the office or do it online, and so on. Now, just before we start today's discussion, I just wanted to mention an interesting thing. You know, we talked about at the very beginning of the series that working in our emotional structure is very difficult because emotions are us, right? And changing our own personality is very difficult. It's easier to think something different or even to behave in a certain way, but to change how we feel is a difficult thing. Change and growth is in general quite difficult, and this is the period of the year where we focus on the growth of the emotions because it's the Omer, as I explained, the 7 weeks, and each week relates to a different one. But just, I wanted to mention that because we should never despair. Even if it doesn't work sometimes, we need to keep trying. And that's a lesson that we learned from yesterday. Yesterday in the Jewish calendar was something called Pesach Sheni, second Pesach. No cleaning or seder or anything, just it's called Pesach Sheni. What's the background? The background of Pesach Sheni is that in ancient times when there was a Mishkan or a tabernacle or a temple, there was a mitzvah on the day before Pesach, the real Pesach, to bring a sacrifice called the Paschal Lamb, which parts of the animal were offered up on the altar, but most of it was eaten, barbecued, and eaten at the Seder. It was a very important and special mitzvah. They did this already in Egypt before they left, but then the first one that was supposed to be done was in when the Jews were in the desert, and they built this Mishkan with the altar, and they were about to, it was the first Pesach, a year later after they left Egypt, and they were going to bring the Paschal Lamb. And then what happened was, there were certain people that couldn't do it, because they were the people who had been carrying Joseph's bones. You know, they took Yosef HaTzadik, Jacob's son, they took him out of Egypt because he wanted to be buried in Israel. So he was, while the Jews were in Egypt, he was interned in Egypt, but when they left, they took his coffin with them, and the people who had done that were actually impure, because if you come into contact with a dead body, you contract an impurity, right? And therefore, the halacha is, the law is that if you're impure, you can't bring the Paschal Lamb. And they approached Moshe Rabbeinu, they approached Moses, and they said, it's not fair, we don't want to lose out on this mitzvah, like, why should we lose out? We want to also be part of this mitzvah of the Paschal Lamb, and therefore, we want to be part of the process. So, Moshe Rabbeinu put in a local call to God, and he was able to do that, right? And the message came back with the following, that they're correct, it was a good aspiration, and therefore there's going to be a special new mitzvah, and the mitzvah is called the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. That in the times, even when the Jews went into Israel and they had a temple, if anyone would be impure and not able to participate in the Paschal Lamb, or they would be far away, they didn't make it on time, or whatever the case is, there's a second chance. The second chance is a month later on the 14th of Iyar, which was yesterday, just like the 14th of Nisan, which is Erev Pesach, that they would have a chance to bring the Paschal Lamb again for it, because they didn't do it the first time, and eat it with matzah to make up for what they missed. Okay, so, but we don't have a temple today, so it doesn't have that practical relevance, but there's an internal lesson with Pesach Sheni. Some people marked Pesach Sheni yesterday, by the way, by eating some more matzah. Those who feel they didn't have enough on Pesach, they, right? But there's an eternal lesson that's learned from Pesach Sheni, and that is that it's never too late. We can always make up. There's always a second chance. There's always a way to come back. So I say that in context of, because it's interesting that the Pesach Sheni is always in the period of the Omer, because we, a time that we focus on refining our emotions and growing and regulating them and so on, and it's a difficult job, and sometimes we give up because it doesn't always work. The lesson of Pesach Sheni is never to give up, always to come back, always to try again. Okay. That's the first point. The second thing, before we get to today's emotion, is the following. Because we're going to talk about Tiferet today, which we'll see. Part of Tiferet is the ability to combine Chesed and Gevurah, right? But before we combine it, we talk about them separately. Even though each one on their own ultimately doesn't always work, right? Even going back, you know, the rabbis tell us an interesting thing, that we know that our patriarchs, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, correspond, we know, Kabbalistically, to the three primary emotions, which is Chesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet, the one we're going to talk about today. But it says that with Abraham, he was very much Chesed. Chesed on its own doesn't always land up well, and that's why he ended up not only having his son Yitzchak, but he also ended up having Ishmael. So in other words, it kind of went off track a little bit, because it was only Chesed. The same thing happened with Yitzchak. Yitzchak was Gevurah. And as a result, he had Esav, right? It was Yaakov, who was Tiferet, who actually, all these 12 or 13 children, actually had a daughter as well, all these children were righteous, right? His family was complete. Nothing went off track. It was a perfect combination. So, that's true, but, we still talk about Abraham and Yitzchak. Why? Because before we can, there's a principle in Judaism that goes like this. Before we can put things together, we can't blur the lines. We need to know, even when we bring Chesed and Gevurah together, we need to know what is Chesed and what is Gevurah. And even when we bring them together, we need to know what we're doing, which is a Chesed thing, what we're doing is a Gevurah thing, Because then we can identify properly, we can know where to apply the chesed, where to apply the gemurah. We need to be able to recognize them independently, even though they're working together. And that's why before we talk about tiferet, we talk about chesed first and then gemurah, so we understand what they are, and then we can work with them together, right? Just to complete this idea, Kabbalistically, that's one of the ideas, even though there's really no real reason for it, but of an aspect of kashrut. One of the ideas behind kashrut is we don't mix meat and milk together, right? Especially if you cook them together, right? Things like that. And we know that kashrut actually belongs to the category of mitzvot that we don't necessarily have a good explanation for. And it's not health, I promise you that, because schmaltzering is not particularly healthy, even if it's got the best hechsher, right? So there's room to, within kashrut, to live unhealthy or to live healthy. But so it's not, so health is not the explanation for kashrut. It's one of these mitzvahs that we do because God said so, and that's okay. We have mitzvot like that. Having said that, there are numerous different Kabbalistic concepts behind even the irrational mitzvot, right? And with basar b'chalav, with meat and milk, one of them is, because we know that Kabbalistically, as we said last week, everything in the world represents one of these seven emotions, or a combination of them, whatever. But milk is chesed, and meat is gevurah. Because milk is very pure, it's like a baby, you know, like it's very sort of white. Chesed is fiery, it's gevurah. Meat is fiery, it's red meat, it's red, and it's, you know, it represents gevurah. When you mix meat and milk together, the meat and the milk become indistinguishable sometimes, especially if you cook them together, right? The tastes merge and mix with each other. And chesed and gevurah mixing in that way is not a good idea, right? Because things must work independently and work together, but independently. Same thing we have in the Torah, this mitzvah, that we're not supposed to wear, it's called shatnez, we're not supposed to wear wool and linen together. Also got to do with chesed and gevurah mixing in a way that is not good, right? But there are some times where mixtures are okay. So I'll give you an example, right? Where we take, on Sukkot, we have the lulav and etrog, and we put them all together. Those are different things that we mix together. Each one represents something different. That's because when you come together, there's two, we learn that there's two criteria for good mixing, right? For good mixtures. What's the two criteria? First of all, that even after the mixture, it has to be distinguishable what is what. In other words, the individuality of each concept must never be lost. And second, it's got to come together for a higher purpose. When you come together for a higher purpose, then the higher purpose unites all those things that work together. So that's, we see that, for example, the lulav and etrog, right? We have different types of species which you put together. They are different, they work different, they symbolize different things. Yet they come together in unity. And what's unity? Unity means when there's different things which retain their difference but yet come together. That's what unity is. And come together for a higher purpose, right? I just mentioned that because that's the idea of chesed and gevurah. So that's why we talk about chesed first and tiferes first, and gevurah first, so we understand what they are. We have Avraham, we have Yitzchak, even though there's problems with that, to do them only individually, but we need to understand them so when they come together, they're distinguishable, they're working together, but they still retain and maintain the individual identity. Yeah, is that clear? Is that, yeah. Okay, good. Okay. So now we come to the third one, which is Tiferet. And Tiferet in the triangle, in the first triangle, you've got Chesed on the right, Gevurah on the left, Tiferet is in the middle. So it's like a triangle, right? You can see on the back of your handout. Now, Tiferet is a difficult emotion to understand exactly what is Tiferet. Because what does it mean when someone has Tiferet, right? We know what it means when someone has chesed. It means they're giving, they're connecting, they're flexible, they're kind, they're compassionate, whatever the case, right? When someone's gevura, it means they're holding back. Good gevura, bad gevura, but they're holding back, right? Discipline, whatever. Self-control. What does it mean to have Tiferet? Now let's develop this question a little bit. Because the way Tiferet is normally understood is that it's a combination of chesed and gevura, right? Which, by the way, is the reason that it's called Tiferet. The word Tiferet means beauty, harmony, right? Because the Kabbalah tells us that when you have, let's say, a garment which has many colors, it creates a certain beauty, right? Sometimes we have multiple things come together, it's like in harmony, like an orchestra, for example. different instruments come together and they play in harmony, it's a certain beauty that's above and stronger than an instrument that plays alone, right? That's why the third middah is called Tiferet, because it's Chesed and Gvura coming together, so therefore it's a combination, so it creates a harmony, it creates a beauty, right? The problem with that is, that's not an emotion. That's not a thing in itself. In other words, you should have Chesed and Gvura work together. We spoke about it last week. But what's Tiferet then? Like, what does it mean, right? If Tiferet is just Chesed and Gvura working together, so why is it a third thing? It's just Chesed and it's Gvura and they're working together. That's fine. So it's two emotions working well. What's Tiferet? Like, what is Tiferet? What's the power of Tiferet? And what does it mean practically? You follow? We could stop before Tiferet and just say, look, it's really important. We explained Chesed, we explained Gvura. It's important that you learn how to bring them together and have a bit of Gvura with your Chesed so it works well, as we explained last week, right? What do we mean when we add a third dimension? We say, well, you've got to have Tiferet. Well, I put Chesed and Gvura together. What does it mean I've got to have Tiferet, right? So what does that mean? That's the first question. Second question is, not only is Tiferet important, obviously, but it actually seems to be more important and foundational than Chesed and Gvura, because I mentioned this last week, that Kabbalah teaches us that the human body, the different parts of the human body represent different emotions, correct? So Chesed and Gvura are the two arms. Right arm is Chesed, left arm is Gvura. But Tiferet is the guf, is the actual abdomen, it's the body, right? The head is the intellect, but the body is Tiferet. So it seems like it's more foundational, it's more important in a way, it's more crucial than Chesed and Gvura, right? Okay. Second question. Third thing I want to just try put there out to understand, because before we give the explanation, is this. That there are sometimes, you know, the Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet have other names. So we find that Tiferet has two other names. One is Emet, truth. Right, truth. And we need to understand what it means. And Rachamim, which means to have mercy, to have compassion. So it seems like compassion actually is not so much a Chesed thing, it's actually more of a Tiferet thing. And we need to understand why that is. Okay, so three questions. What is Tiferet? If it's just Chesed and Gvura working together, why is it a third thing? What's unique about Tiferet? Second thing is, why is it even more crucial and critical than Chesed and Gvura? It's the body, not just the arms. What's its combination? What's its greatness, in other words? And thirdly, why is it also called truth and compassion? Or compassion and truth. Rachamim and Chesed. Okay, we're good with the questions? Yeah? Okay. So let me take you on a little bit of a journey. So it works like this. In the very first 2 weeks ago, we explained something. When we talk about the emotions of a person, as opposed to the intellect of a person, emotions are, by default, when they're expressed, there's on the, over there, there's a, oh, okay, there's a box of pens there, I think. Oh, okay.
Sorry, it's getting a bit complicated.
Yeah, that's okay. No, that's fine. No, I fully understand. I hope the box is not empty, actually.
No,
Kenzie
there.
Oh, here. Oh, there we are, okay. Good. So, when we talk about the emotional structure of a person, we said in the very first session that emotions compared to intellect is that intellect makes room for another, right? So you can entertain things that are outside of you. Whereas emotions, midot, as we call them, are very much you. And therefore the egocentricity of a person is very, very expressed in emotions, right? Like if you see someone getting emotional, even good emotions, they're expressing themselves, right? Emotions are very much the personality of the person. Now, the problem with the intellect is it's very nice. Intellect has a certain humility to it if one is open to ideas, but that's just in the world of intellect. It doesn't affect the person themselves. Obviously, the idea is to bring humility into our personality, right? Which is why we have to refine and work with our emotions to create that humility. But the emotional structure by default is very much an expression of self. And not just an expression of self, but a very strong expression of self, because emotions are very strong, right? Emotions are very crucial, by the way. Emotions are a very, very important part of the person. Because as we said in the beginning, emotions are when we, it's us responding to the outside world. So emotions are very crucial to the person because they bring passion, they bring emotion, they bring excitement, they bring enthusiasm. The building blocks of relationships. You can't have relationships without emotion, right? Relationships that are just in the head are very, very flat and very bad relationships, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, no one marries someone because on paper it sounds good. It's got to feel good, right? You got to have passion, you got to have love, you got to have respect and so on. So they're very important, but at the end of the day, emotions are an expression of self. Which becomes a problem. Because if we have a certain emotional personality, an emotional disposition, because it's a very, very strong sense of self, right? The question then becomes, how do we integrate the different opposite emotions? It almost seems like it's impossible. Because they are very different. Each emotion is completely different. Chesed and Gevura are completely different. We know they have to come together, but they're completely different. In fact, even the things that they're compared to, Chesed is compared to water, Mayim, and Gevura to Esh, to fire, right? Well, in the physical world, they don't mix. Clearly. They're at odds with each other. And water and fire evolve from the spiritual emotions of Chesed and Gevura, which is where our Chesed and Gevura comes from as well. So how do they mix? How does it come together, right? It seems like almost impossible for them to actually effectively and successfully work together. Which is why we see often with people that it doesn't work together. Right? You see people who are very chesed find it very difficult to have gevura, to set boundaries. You find people who are very gevura, they find it very difficult to be chesed, if they're pure gevura. Right? Because it's two opposite things that are very difficult to come together, particularly to work together within the same experience. In other words, even if we say that, okay, you know what, they could be both used. So let's say we said, okay, I'm a chesed person, but I can use gevura. But then when I use gevura, it's going to be only gevura. You find that. You find that's more common to do that. Children do that a lot, right? But to work together and to come together and to coexist in the same experience, that's very difficult. So what is Tiferet? Tiferet is not just them coming together. Tiferet is the mechanism which allows them to come together. Right? And we'll explain what the mechanism is in a second. Tiferet is a very deep power, it's a very deep tool that we have, which is part of our emotional structure. In Kabbalah we learn that Tiferet is in the middle because it goes way up. In other words, it has a higher source than Chesed and Gevura. It's a very deep tool. And what is that tool? It's a tool that we use to bring opposites together. Now, how does that work? So, before we say how it works, just so to go back to the way I asked the question, right? So, Tiferet is not the combination of Chesed and Gevura. Chesed and Gevura have to combine. Tiferet is what is the tool that makes it possible for Chesed and Gevura to come together. That's what Tiferet is. Now, what is that tool? So we have to understand how the soul works. Okay, I'm sharing with you some deep Kabbalah today. We have to understand how the soul works. So there's what we call the etzem of the soul, the essence of the soul, right? And then there's the manifestations of the soul. You follow? So I'll give you an example. If you look at a tree, right? How do you define a tree? Something that has leaves? No. Because lots of things can have leaves, right? Something that has fruits? Is that all that a tree is? No, a tree can, it can be wood, it can be used for firewood, I don't know, right? Branches, no, you can have, branches can fall off a tree and it's still a tree, right? In other words, what I'm saying is that there's the tree and then there's the things that come from the tree, that the tree manifests itself in these different things. So when you say, what's a tree? A tree is a tree, whatever that is. But a tree grows branches. A tree bears fruit. A tree has leaves, right? Roots, has roots, all these things. Yeah, kind of the roots are here. Same thing with the neshama. So we talk about that with this 10 powers of the soul, right? But the 10 powers of the soul are not the soul. They're branches of the soul. You follow? You'll see where I'm going in a few moments. Okay, now, these branches of the soul, which is chesed, gevura, when they manifest themselves, they are like just like a tree. When the tree grows and produces branches and fruit and leaves, all these different things that it produces are very different from each other, right? The bark of a tree is completely different than the apple of the tree. Very different from the leaves, different from the flowers that blossom. They're all very different. They come from the same source, but as they grow out and as they manifest themselves, they are completely different. Just like with us. The way our different branches of our tree grow out to be different, they are completely different. Chesed is chesed and gevura is gevura. They're very, very different. However, what is true is they're only very different when they manifest themselves as an independent thing. Right? Then they're very egocentric, and then they're very independent, they're very individual, which is fine. But however, in their source, they're not different at all. And let me give you an example. So let's go back to the tree, right? Everything that the tree produces has to be in the DNA of the seed, correct? It won't produce anything that's not in the seed. Same thing with the person, right? So in other words, the branches, the fruit, the leaves, the bark, are all in the same seed, right? In some scientific molecule, then DNA structure, correct? When they're in the seed, are they distinguishable? Could you say, there's the branch, there's the thing? No. It's all one seed. It's all one thing. Follow? It's when they become an independent thing that they're completely different and individual from the other parts. Right? So I'll give you another example that's given in Hasidic teachings. You have a king. Hasidic teaching is very fond of analogies of kings. Right? In fact, I'll tell you a cute little story, a real Hasidic story. In kings throughout the ages, there were kings or rulers, whatever. And they manifest themselves in different ways. So, you know, before the Russian Revolution, the Tsar was a sort of a king, right? And some of them were more decent, some of them were terrible. They were kings. So when the revolution came and the Tsar was overthrown, there was an old Hasid who lived in a different world. He lived in a different reality. His reality was studying and learning Hasidic teachings and things like that. So the Tsar was overthrown. He cried. Most people didn't cry. The Tsar was considered a very evil entity at the time. And communism, unfortunately at the time, was promising. But right, so no one else cried, but he was crying. So they asked him, why are you crying? He said, because that I learn a lot of Hasidic teachings and they always give an analogy of a king. And now that analogy in the physical sense has just been removed, it's been overthrown. So it's hard to understand, like, how are we going to explain this analogy going forward, right? Now when I explain this analogy to my students, I'm able to say, like a czar, like a king, right? So, and now the king's no longer there. Anyway, so it gives a lot of... So we have to go back to history, we have to imagine a king. Okay. So the analogy is given like this. You have a king. The king is all-powerful, right? The king is the ruler, dictator, whatever. But the king has different officers, different ministers, right? So the king appoints a minister of finance, right? The job of that minister is to look after the budget, right? Then he appoints another minister, a minister of growth, a minister of investment, a minister of infrastructure, let's say, right? Now, these two are very, very different. Yeah? They're very, very different. Why? Because The Minister of Finance wants to be able to be successful, so he wants to be able to balance the books. So he's going to always hold spending back, right? He's always going to say, no, it's too expensive. You can't do this, right? The Minister of Infrastructure will say, we need billions of dollars. We need to, this road is broken. This thing is not. We need to build more buildings. We need to build more roads. It's got to be a better country. So he wants to spend. So you've got a machoikas here. You've got an ongoing conflict, right? So the Minister of Minister of Finance and the Minister of Infrastructure don't get on with each other. They fight with each other. Until they're both called into the throne room. And suddenly they forget about the individualism, right? What are they? Then they remind themselves who they both work for. They remind themselves that they're both working for the same purpose. So they've got to do what the king wants them to do. It's not about what they want to do in their little individual world. They've got to do what's good for the greater intention of the king, right? So this analogy is brought to Hasidic teachings to describe two angels. We have this two, we learn about the two great angels, Michael and Gabriel. And Michael is the angel of kindness, of chesed, and water, and Gabriel is the angel of gevurah, of fire, right? And you know, when Kaddish is recited, I'm sure you know this, because it's a famous song, right? And now you'll understand what it means. You know, at the end of Kaddish, we say, Oseh shalom bimramav. You know what that means? Oseh shalom bimramav, right? What is it?
Yes.
Exactly. So, Oseh shalom bimramav is he who makes peace in heaven, right? Hu yaseh shalom aleinu, he should grant us peace down here, right? I'll call Yisrael for the whole Jewish nation, Imramen, right? So we say, we turn to God and we say, you who makes peace in the heavens, you should make peace down here too. So what do you mean he makes peace in the heavens? Who's fighting in the heavens? Right? What politics is there in Shamayim, right? The answer is that God has ministers. He's got the minister of fire, he's got the minister of water, he's got Michael, Gabriel, and they don't get on. But, Oseh Shalom Imrav, God makes peace. How does he make peace? Because when they both come before God, so to speak, when they realize who they represent, then they've got to work together because they're working for the same cause, right? It's not about them, it's about something higher. So this is an analogy, this is all leading up to understand what Tiferet is. Tiferet means the ability to go very deep into our soul and to come to a place of lack of ego where all the emotions are not individuals competing forces, but they're all part of the same soul and all there to serve and to express the same neshama. Right? We'll understand practically what this means in a minute, but I'm sharing with you the philosophical idea. If I'm a chesed person, I'm working on chesed, I find it very difficult to integrate with gevurah, it's because I haven't gone deep. I'm working on the branches of the tree, and the branch is forgetting where it comes from, and it's forgetting why it's there. The branch is saying, my job is to be a branch, my job is to be a tree, my job is to be a leaves, my job is to be a trunk, right? And at that level, the individualism and the individualism has generated into an egocentricity, which is very strong, and it's impossible to combine it with something else. And at that level, chesed does not combine with gevurah. Gevurah does not combine with chesed, especially in the same experience. Unless the person connects to the power of Tiferet. And the power of Tiferet is to go deeper and to go to where chesed and gevurah come from, where they're actually all one. They're in the seed, they're all one, where there's no ego. Where it's not about the chesed, it's not about the gevurah, it's about the soul. Or it's about something higher than the soul. It's about what the soul is connected to, i.e. God, right? Now, of course, you still, as I said before, you still got to work with the individuality of chesed, the individuality of guru, that is true. It's not about disintegrating the tree, it's about connecting to the root of the tree, to the origin of the tree. Because the way God designed us is that we need chesed to work as chesed, and we need guru to work as guru, as we said before. They're not supposed to mix, they're not supposed to blur. They have to work, but they have to work together and integrate with each other, but still be ches, still be gevura, right? And know what I'm doing is ches, which part of what I'm doing is ches, which part I'm doing is gevura, but to bring it together. The only way that can happen is to go to something much deeper, which is the concept of Tiferet. Tiferet is that ability to strip the emotions of their egocentricity by going deeper into the root and origin of where Chesed and Gevurah come from. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Now we can understand, right? First of all, let's talk about Rachamim. Now we can understand also why Tiferet is called Rachamim. It's called compassion. Compassion is a very interesting thing. See, when a person is full on chesed, right, without the ability to have gevura, yeah? So chesed can also sometimes seem very compassionate because chesed means an unlimited giving, right? But when I work only with chesed and not gevura, let's say I'm a very chesed person, I'll end up giving to everything without any discernment, without any differentiation, to the deserving and the undeserving, to the and I'll give the doses that are, doesn't matter. Right? So it's like the person I've often given you into the analogy, the person goes in the street and you see a person wants $20, and even though in the back of your mind you know they're going to actually use it for a substance that's going to be very harmful to them, you just can't say no. So you give it and just that's it, right? A parent who just full on chesed just says yes to everything and never can say no and spoils the child. Right? So chesed can start off very compassionate, it can look like compassion, but it's actually not compassion. It's just chesed. Gevurah, on the other hand, is rejection. Also not good, just if it's just rejection, right? What's rachamim? You know, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, right? One of the big themes that we use in our prayers on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is rachamim. We say, Av harachaman, God is the merciful Father, right? Rachamim means where it's clear what is deserving and what isn't deserving. There is gevurah there, that's a gevurah concept. A person doesn't deserve, but I'm still going to have compassion on them in the appropriate way. Essentially, what do we come to God? God, we know that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is Yom Hadin. It's a day of judgment, right? We say to God, even though you're judging us, and judgment is not a bad thing because there needs to be justice in the world, there needs to be boundaries, there needs to be din, and we know sometimes we've messed up, so therefore, we're asking you for rachamim. So rachamim is a combination of chesed and gevurah. It's I'm going to give, right? But it's a different type of giving them because you give in an appropriate way. So for example, let's say a child, for example, won something and the child clearly is not deserving, right? Now it's the duty of a father or a mother to teach the child and to instill values, right? So sometimes it means holding back and sometimes it means, well, I will. It's not just, yes, of course, you said you want it, I'll give it to you, right? It's knowing, it's a parent knowing, and a parent has the responsibility to know when a child has messed up, and when a child needs consequences, or a child needs boundaries. And the parent will say to a child, I'm going to be very merciful of you, I'm not going to punish you, and I'm not going to think, but I'm going to, let's say, you didn't deserve this, what, maybe you could do something to deserve it, so we teach you responsibility, right? So you bring together the chesed and the gevurah with compassion, real compassion. So it's compassionate, but compassion recognizes the gevurah aspect as well, and is able to blend that in. That's why Tiferet is called Rachamim. Because real compassion is not just about chesed. It's where gevurah is also present, and yet we're still giving and we're still being compassionate. We're bringing in the chesed as well to the gevurah. Right? Now, that's also why, and this is a very important thing, why Tiferet is called Emet. It's called truth. Because the difference between chesed, gevurah, and tiferet is this. When a person is only working on the conscious level, where the different emotions are very strong with each other, right? Are very against each other, competing with each other. In other words, we're looking on the level of where they're very individual, the tree, the branches, the tree itself, right? And therefore, that's a place where the ego lives and everyone is competing to express their individuality. And therefore, if a person is a chesed person, it's only chesed. If a person is a gevurah person, only gevurah, right? Essentially, what's happening, they haven't yet gone deep enough to be able to combine them to understand where it comes from so they can coexist. So what happens is, when a person is only expressing chesed, they're expressing themselves. So if I respond to someone only with chesed, even if it's good chesed, essentially, I'm not necessarily going beyond myself. I'm expressing myself. If someone says something to me that I don't like and I get angry, inappropriately, I don't temper the anger and I don't sort of work out how to have the conversation by creating boundaries and doing it in a compassionate way, in a respectful way, and so on. I'm just expressing me. I'm broadcasting me. That's what normal, strong emotions without working on them, untamed emotions, unrefined emotions, is just an expression of me, who I am. That's what I'm going to express. Right? When I connect to Tiferet, when I use the tool of Tiferet, which means I go deeper, I go to the root of the emotions, the place where the ego is not in the way, the level where Chesed and Gvura are blended with each other, right? When I go to that level, I'm not looking for self. What am I looking for? I'm looking for what's right. Right? I'm looking for what's effective. I'm looking for the truth. And that's Tiferet. That's what Tiferet is called, truth. So let's understand. So let's go back, because it's just simple to use this for parenting is a great example of this, right? A child walks into the room and does something completely wrong. Parent screams. The Gvura parent explodes. Child comes into the room and says, I want something. The Chesed parent just says yes, right? What are both parents doing? Expressing themselves, that's all. The one's Chesed, the one's Gvura. And at that level, the Chesed is egocentric, and so is the Gvura. In the Gvura person, therefore, they're expressing what they are. They're expressing their self. What does an effective parent do? Goes to Tiferet. Right? Which is why, by the way, parenting is so hard. And becoming harder, because it takes a lot of self-development for the most part, especially nowadays, right? Because the Gvura parents, if they go deeper to where they're not walking about self, but actually looking for what is right, what is true, what is effective, what is needed, I want to kill the kid, but it's not effective. That's just me. What is effective is to be assertive and say that is wrong. Let's sit down, let's talk about it, or create assertive boundaries, whatever's needed. But whatever's going to be needed is going to be a combination of Chesed and Gevurah for the most part. Right? And even though I had a rough morning with my daughter, my son, that night, I'm still going to be able to smile. I'm still going to be able to show love, because love is so important, because I can only put boundaries if there's also love, and so on and so forth. Well, how am I going to be able to do that? Sometimes you... Parents wake up in the morning and the teenager who was completely obnoxious the night before, walks down the stairs as if nothing happened. Hi, mom, hi, dad. What do you mean, hi, mom, hi, dad? You were such an animal last night. I don't want to talk to you, right? And the answer is no, because you've got to bounce back. Why? Because it's not about you. It's about what's going to be effective with the child, right? They need to be disciplined, But they need to be shown love, Two things can come together, because Chesed and Gevurah have to coexist. How do I make that happen? When I'm still reeling from, they're over it 10 minutes later, but I'm not. I'm still like traumatized from it for the next 3 weeks, right? The answer is, because it's not about me. It's Tiferet. Tiferet means I go deeper into my soul. It's not about my emotions. It's not about my personality. It's about what needs to be done. It's about the truth. Same thing with all that analogy I always give you about the homeless person who has $20 and he's hungry. He's clearly hungry. So the Chesed person says yes, and it's ineffective. Gevurah person says get lost, because the Gevurah person. Both people are just expressing themselves. The Tiferet person says, not about me, let's see what the truth is. The truth is, I need a combination of Chesed and Gevurah. I'm not going to give you the $20, but come, I'll take you over the road to the delicatessen, and I'll buy you a sandwich. Why? Because they connected deeper. Connected where the self is not getting in the way. So, Tiferet itself is not a combination of Chesed and Gevurah. Tiferet is the tool that allows me to combine Chesed and Gevurah. Because it's saying, how am I going to combine Chesed and Gevurah? I need to use Tiferet. I need to go deep to a place where the ego is not getting in the way, and then to be able to combine the Chesed and the Gevurah together for the same cause. Ultimately, it's for the same cause. It's to create the same connection, the same relationship. Got it? Now, what does it mean practically? So, how do I do Tiferet, right? Let's suppose it says, okay, I really want to do this. How do I do it? How does it manifest it, put away, right? How do we express Tiferet? So there are a number of different things. And we'll see also, by the way, there could be... So the first step of Tiferet is, it's about looking beyond myself. It's about getting rid of the self, right? Not to be wrapped in ourselves. Not to be wrapped in our own, even good personality. It's about going beyond self to look deeper, right? One of the things that will facilitate Tiferet is the concept of awareness. We've talked about this before. Right? Awareness. Look around. Notice things. Notice what people are feeling. Notice what's needed. It's like I've told you, you know, about the speaker that gets up and speaks. It's about like good communication sometimes, like being aware, like about reading an audience, for example, right? Not like the speaker gets up and no one's listening and they just keep going, right? I hope I'm not doing that. No. Right? But it's about noticing. Noticing body language, noticing cues, right? Being aware. It's having foresight. It's about thinking, you know, what am I going to do in this situation? Am I just going to let myself take its course? When you let self take its course, it's normally not good. Even if it's chesed, for sure, if it's guru. Right? Don't let yourself just take its course. Just have a plan. Like, what am I going to do to rise above myself, right? It's about being perceptive. It's about having tact. It's about reading. It's about being, looking, noticing, and making room for something other than self. That's how Tiferes works, that's how Tiferes manifested. Now, by the way, Tiferes can be misused, like everything. Sometimes people are very, very clever. They can actually use the concept of Tiferet for manipulation. A person can be very insightful, but very perceptive, very noticed, and therefore they can use that to manipulate other people. They can say, you know what, I really... And it's an extreme expression of self, but it's a clever person who puts self aside to get what they want. Right? Like I've told you this, one of the books I never liked was a very old book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Right? Because it wasn't about personal growth, it was about how to influence other people. That's not growing. That's just being manipulative. Right? I mean, that's a bit of an extreme word, but that's what it is. That's bad Tiferet, basically. It was a book on bad Tiferet. Right? Like, be clever now, you know? You want to get what you want? Don't just scream at the person. You know, speak like this, so you'll get what you want. But it's not about you. It's about emet. That's the thing. It's about truth. So that can be bad Tiferet as well. But otherwise, good Tiferet. And you know, and sometimes Tiferet people can be very charming, very charismatic, right? So charisma, charm, all these things go with Tiferet, but then it's not always good. Sometimes it's actually manipulative. But that's bad Tiferet. So obviously, when we talk about Tiferet, it's got to be real Tiferet, where we actually look beyond self. And it's noticing. You know, you see, I'll tell you a couple of stories where you see this with great people. In a few weeks is the 3rd of Tammuz, which is this year, it's the 30th Yahrzeit of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who had an amazing Tiferet. Now, it's interesting because he had, why I say this, because often it's misunderstood, I think, because like sometimes people always talk about him, people always talk about his extreme chesed, which was true. He had extreme chesed, his love for his fellow man, his fellow Jew, the idea of giving, accepting, non-judgmentalism, all that stuff was very true. But actually he also had extreme gevurah, which people don't talk about or don't notice sometimes. Right? He was very uncompromising when it came to Jewish law. When it came to Israel, you know, he had this very strong view about not giving back an inch of the land of Israel. It was quite right when it came to that, right? And he would scream about it sometimes. And he was very strict on his own personal followers and Hasidim about things they're allowed to do and not allowed to do. There was a lot of gevurah there. And because Judaism contains gevurah, halakha is all about gevurah, right? At the end of the day, discipline. Right? But yet, he didn't have chesed or gevurah. He had really tiferet. It was like a perfect combination of the both. And it came out a lot. I'll tell you one story which sticks in my mind. It's a very interesting story. You have to appreciate the story because to appreciate the gevurah of the story as well, right? Because the Rebbe was, when it came to Jewish law, he was actually very uncompromising. And it's a funny detail, but it's an amazing story because it brings out such an amazing skill, really. So there was a thing that at the end of every festival, the Rebbe would have a fabrengen, means you have a big gathering. And he would wash on challah at the beginning, and they would talk, like the end of the festival, right? The end of Rosh Hashanah, and Simchat Torah, sure. And then at the end of it all, they would sing Nigunim, L'chaim, all things. They would say Birkat HaMazon, and then Davin would say the evening prayers, and then the Rebbe would make Havdalah, which is what you make over a cup of wine, and you just, and then the Rebbe would give what's called koshel bracha. He would give every chassid that would pass by, he would give him a little bit of wine. What he used to do is he would stand there for hours, giving everyone a little bit of wine, and they kept on refilling his kiddush cup. There was a person who was, that was his job. And what was everyone doing while this was happening? They were singing the guni. It was a very beautiful time, actually. The Rebbe kept on pouring, and everyone was singing songs in the gunim, and sometimes the Rebbe, with his other hand, would sort of say, sing stronger, and it would be a very beautiful experience. Part of that experience was a chazan who used to come at that time, not from, it wasn't a Chabad guy, he was a Russian guy. He used to come after Yontov was out already, he would come, and he would go in line and get his little chaim from the Rebbe, and then he would stand to his side, and he would sing Russian Hasidic tunes, right? And the Rebbe would be very happy. Often the Rebbe would, you know, encourage the singing, be very strong. But all the time while still pouring, right? And one time, this chazan came with his daughter, who was fairly young, but she was getting a bit older, but she was a young kid, right? And okay, it was no good. Came his daughter. The Rebbe gave both of them a little bit of wine with chaim, and then he went to the side and started to sing. Now, the Rebbe was quite strict, and I'm not judging anyone, and this is not a discussion on this law, but he had a fairly strict observance of halacha, and one of them is the idea of kolisha, about a woman not singing in public, right? So this little girl didn't know that, so she started to sing. And the Rebbe noticed that she's singing. So the Rebbe asked his secretary just to go over and ask her to clap, instead of singing, in other words, right? Okay. So the secretary was a bit too enthusiastic, I think, and because his job was to do what the Rebbe wanted, so he like ran over. Probably could have done it a bit softer, but he ran over and asked the girl if she doesn't mind clapping instead of singing. So she started to do that, and the Rebbe looked up and saw her. And I think the Rebbe noticed that maybe she was a little bit taken aback, right? So the Rebbe stopped the whole thing, put down his kiddush cup, looked straight at that girl and started to clap with her, right? And she felt like $1 million. I mean, for the Rebbe to stop what he's doing, look at this girl, give her only focus on her and give her attention, and just to clap with her. And I always think of that story as an unbelievable Tiferet story, right? Where the Gevurah remains Gevurah, and the Chesed remains Chesed, and you bring them together. And truth is, this was always what he would do. The Rebbe was, as I've said to you many times, he was a very demanding person. I don't think ever someone went by the dollars or an audience with him, and he wouldn't tell him to do something, right? No one ever came out of the Rebbe's room without a job to do. It was always without taking the next step. And yet everyone took it, and everyone was amazed by it, and everyone felt warm. Why? Because it didn't come, it was guru with chesed. It was always that combination. Because it wasn't about expressing what he wanted, it was about seeing how the person could take it without compromising on the chesed or the guru if it was necessary. I'll tell you a story of a different rabbi, a very famous rabbi called Rav Chaim of Brisk. I think I've told you the story before. The Briskerel, right? Chaim of Brisk was a very kind man, but he was a big rabbi and a very strict rabbi, very, very ultra. And one time he was sitting in his office before Pesach, and a Jew came to ask a halachic question. And the students were around, they were observing what was going on. And the halachic question is it permissible to use milk for the four cups on Pesach night? So Chaim Brisk didn't answer the question. He took out 50 ruble and gave it to the person and said, go have a good yontif. So the student said, what was that all about? He said, first of all, didn't you notice what's going on? Now, so there's a gevurah and chesed thing here. Why? Halacha is a gevurah thing. Like when you say you can't do something, that's a gevurah thing, right? And the truth is, it's very dicey if you can use milk for it. There might be according to one some opinion, but the truth is, the answer is no. You can't really, right? But it wasn't just about saying what halacha was, because he was a rabbi that noticed. He said to his students, what do you think? If you're asking me if you can do four cups on milk, he obviously doesn't have meat for Yontif either, because he's a religious Jew. He's not going to eat meat and milk in the same meal, right? So his Seder is not going to have wine or meat. So he doesn't have Yontif, basically, right? So I could just answer the question. That's my job. My job is to answer halachic questions. I could say, no, you can't. We'll buy it. Next person, right? He didn't do that. Why? Because he noticed. He was aware, right? And this happens very often. Sometimes people get criticized for their gvura, and often it's not their gvura that's the problem. Gvura has a place. Right? This happens with leaders sometimes. They're strict, whatever the case. People get criticized for their policies. Why can't you compromise? Why can't you do this? Why can't you do that? You know something? A lot of the times, it's nothing to do with the lack of compromise. Because there are certain things in Jewish law that we can't compromise on. It's got to do with the tiferet, lack of tiferet, not the lack of... It's not the too much gvura, it's the lack of tiferet. That's what's going on. It's about how you deliver that message. It's how you compensate, you know, how you, okay, you can't do this, but let me help you, maybe you could do that, right? That kind of thing. So that's the power of Tiferet. It's being aware. It's about noticing the other. Like Reb Chaim Brisky said, you know, there's no, you're asking about milk, you obviously don't have meat. So forget about, I'm not going to tell you yes, you can say, because the answer is not yes. That's an uncompromising thing. The answer is no, you can't use milk. But I can see there's a deeper problem here. I don't want you to go away upset. I'm not going to compromise. It's halacha as halacha. But I'm going to give you wine. I'm going to give you meat. I'm going to give you everything so you have a proper Seder. And then it's no problem. I didn't say something wrong. I didn't compromise on the Gemara. But at the same time, I gave tremendous chesed. Why? Because he went down to the Tiferet. And he noticed what was going on. So that's the power of Tiferet. Next week we go to the second triangle, which is called the supporter triangle. We'll deal with what's called Netzach next week, please God. Have a wonderful week.